another song. Now, this is a trusting soul that will pick this up from this morning and take us. This year has been the worst year that I've ever known for me personally for sinus problems. It seems like I haven't had any relief this year from it. Anyway, as I sat singing and looking around some, I saw Caroline Whatley was singing with us and smiling and laughing. And I'm reminded, and was really reminded yesterday evening, we went to, a dual birthday party of some young folks here in the congregation. And so I think somebody told me that there were 6 mothers that were expecting there. And I don't know how many kids there were, but there was a bunch. And everybody here knows that we have lots and lots and lots of children in this congregation. And we're really, really blessed. Because not every congregation that's true of. And so we're very thankful to the Lord for that. And it reminds me, as I also look around and see lots of problems in homes today, it reminds me of the responsibility that we as a church have to help young parents to teach and train their children. And I will say that I personally have not done very much preaching about the home and family, and I intend for the next few months to do some preaching about that, because I wish that there had been someone who could have gotten some things through my mind as a young father that would have helped the years, those years that are really difficult, I think, because everything is coming out of the ground. Dad's trying to, sometimes mom trying to get careers going, and things are happening, pressures are coming from every side. Children are there, and they require as much time as you can possibly give, and then some more. And we have lots of feelings, sometimes some guilt feelings, because we put so much time here, and we need to put time here, and we need to put time here, and it's just a real difficulty in our life, a struggle. And I've had advice, just like you have. Some of it stuck and some of it didn't. Some of it was worthwhile, some of it wasn't so worthwhile. But I do recall an elder telling me one time that rearing your children would be just about what you decided it was going to be. If you decided it was going to be problems, then you would have problems. And if you decided it was going to be a joyous thing, then it would very likely be a joyous thing. And there is some wisdom in that. It's not an absolute, but there is some wisdom in that. It's pretty much true that if you decide it's going to be lots of heartache, then that probably will be a prophecy that will come true. I read an article in a newspaper not long ago about a divorced father who donated a kidney to a complete stranger. And he said that he wanted to do something to make his children proud. However, his 10-year-old daughter wasn't very impressed. She said her father never comes to see her and never calls, not even on her birthday. "I don't think he's much of a hero," she said. "He hasn't even sent any money to help support our family in over 9 months. And so making a sacrifice like that, as noble as it may have been in some circles, wasn't particularly impressive to his own child. As we all know, family problems are not limited to those outside the church, unfortunately. Even preachers, and maybe even especially preachers in some cases, are notorious for neglecting our family while trying to save everybody else's family. A few years ago, the married daughter of a gospel preacher that I had influenced to become a preacher came to me shortly after I had preached his funeral. He died, and she came to me a while after that, and she said, "Will you tell me about my daddy? I don't know him." And I have to tell you, I went home and cried, because she was so very serious about that. And as I thought about their life, I think she was probably right. I think he was an outstanding man in many ways. Not long ago, I received word that a preacher who preaches for a large congregation not far from where I was fired because of adultery. Out of my class, the first class at White's Ferry Road School of Preaching, there were 19 who graduated in that class. I know of 3 who have left their wife and family. Being a Christian doesn't ensure that you'll not have family problems, and being a preacher doesn't either. Eli did, didn't he? I guess the Old Testament equivalent to a preacher. In 1 Samuel chapter 2 through 4, he had 2 sons who served as priests, and they refused to abide by the laws of sacrifice. They wanted grilled steak rather than boiled steak. They committed fornication with the women at the door of the tabernacle. And Eli didn't do anything about it. And he paid, and they paid. Samuel had problems. 1 Samuel chapter 8, he had 2 sons who served as judges. The Bible says they took bribes and perverted justice. And they caused the people to, they gave occasion to the people to demand to have a king. And it broke Samuel's heart. But some of it was his fault. He has to shoulder some of the responsibility for them wanting a king. David had problems in 2 Samuel 15. He had a son who killed his brother and then later led a rebellion against his father. Good King Hezekiah had problems with his children in 2 Kings 21, one of the greatest kings in all the 38 kings of the divided kingdom. In his 29 years of reigning over Judah, he removed idolatry completely from Israel. In 2 Kings 18:15, it says, "He trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him there was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor were there any before him." That's quite a statement, isn't it? And then his son, Manasseh, immediately restored idolatry. Something was missing in that home. And while he himself led an exemplary life in many ways, then he failed to train up his sons so that they would follow in his footsteps. I don't stand before you now, and I hope that I never will stand before you and act like try to give you the impression that I have the solution to every family problem. I don't. I've noticed that the people who think that they can solve every family problem either don't have children of their own or their grandparents, one of the two. So I've concluded that you know everything before you have children, and you evidently forget everything that you knew while you were rearing your children. And then when you become a grandparent, suddenly you remember everything again. I've learned that I can't solve the family problems that many folks have. In some cases, it took many years to develop those problems. And that harm for many years can't be undone with some magic pill or with some words. My wife and I have 4 daughters, and I have lots of stories that I think are funny being the only male among five females. And I've learned to keep my mouth closed a lot. But I have lots of observations about rearing daughters. I don't have any experience at rearing sons. I really think that the key to having a strong Christian home is to ignore what the world has to say, first of all. And secondly, preach and teach what the Bible teaches. And thirdly, live what you preach. I really do believe that's the key to having godly children and a godly home. If you want a godly home, then you need to realize, first of all, that your family is your most important ministry. Short of pleasing God Himself and being in a relationship with Him, there's nothing more important in your life that you'll ever have or you'll ever do than rearing your family. I had a discussion with someone very recently, in the last few days, and we were talking about when we things in our past. And I related that when my dad had cancer and was dying, we were fortunate to be able to spend some time together in the hospital, and he knew that he was dying. And I can remember he said, "Son, there's only one regret I have in my life, and you know probably what it is because it's been said over and over and over and over again." He said, "I regret that I didn't spend more time with my family." I have a close friend who's a preacher whose wife left him, and he was and still is one of the most dedicated preachers that I know. I don't know that I know anybody who loves the Lord more than he does, who has more zeal for evangelism and reaching out and teaching people. His wife, for several years, tried to tell him that he needed to spend more time at home with their children. And his attitude was, "I'm doing the Lord's work, and there's nothing more important than that." And his children got that impression from him also, that the work that he was involved in was more important than they were. And that created some deep resentment on their part. And what he didn't realize was that being a godly husband and father was and is the Lord's work. And there is no greater work than that. The families of many dedicated, hard-working Christians are often sacrificed on the altar of service. And you'll get lots of encouragement from people to do that. So the first thing that I want to tell you about strengthening your family is realize that your own family is your first ministry. And don't neglect that ministry. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, "If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." And I know that that context is talking about supplying physical needs. But the principle of caring for your family is not limited to giving them food and clothes. Without a doubt, you would die for your family. But the real question is, will you live for them? And I'm not real sure about this. I'm still struggling with this. Some about where it talks about in various places in the New Testament about laying your life down for someone. I think most certainly that that does mean that you'd be willing to die for them. But I also have something within me that wants to say that that also means that you lay your life down, meaning that you put your own priorities aside and you do the things that are necessary for them. And in that way, you're living for them. You're laying your life down for them. And of the two, that's by far the harder. We'd certainly die for our children and our wives and our husbands, but will we live for them? Day after day, will we do the things that are necessary for them to be strong Christian leaders when they develop and grow up? You know, one of the scariest scenarios, and every time I go through it, I get kind of a chill. It's in Genesis chapter 4, verse 3, where Jacob is trying to be persuaded by his son Judah to let them take Benjamin back with them. You remember whenever Joseph was in Egypt and he inquired about their family, and they said, yeah, there's a younger brother at home. And he said, well, if you come back, don't come back without that youngest boy, and that way I'll know that you're not lying to me. And so when the food ran out, and Judah came to Jacob and he said, I've got to take Benjamin with me. And he said, no, it's not going to happen. I've already lost one son, and I'm not going to lose another. And as I listened to that conversation, then in verse 8, he says in Genesis chapter 4, if I do not bring him back to you, then let me bear the blame forever. And it occurs to me that God has loaned you and me the children that we have. And there's something about making a vow like this, that if I don't bring them back to you, then let me bear the blame forever. Now, I really don't want to create additional hurt in the lives of parents who've struggled with their children in any of this. But I do want to impress on young parents how very serious it is that God has loaned you these children and you only have them for a few years. And you don't get to go back and undo and redo. It's just one time through. And you have to do it right. You don't have a choice. You have to do it right. Because as we get older, it occurs to us more and more that all of that other stuff that we spend our life doing is really not that important. It's kind of like we talked about in the sermon a week or so ago. If somebody had told me that when I got to the top that there was nothing there, it would have changed my life. I mean, if your goal was to have $1 million, when you get $1 million, what do you have? What would you give in exchange? How many people would give that $1 million for the opportunity to go back and to spend time in something other than trying to accumulate that $1 million? God has given us a pattern for families. And I just want to generically look at it, and we will, Lord willing, I don't necessarily mean immediately in the next week or so, but in upcoming weeks, we'll look at some of these things in much more detail. There's a pattern for husbands and wives in Ephesians 5, Colossians 3, and 1 Peter chapter 3. And I would recommend to you that you write those passages down and you study and read those passages and let God teach you, let God talk to you about what kind of husband we need to be and what kind of wife we need to be. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. There's a key there. And as I said he laid his life down for the church. But he didn't just die for the church, did he? He lived every moment of every day for her. Husbands, if you'll love that woman the way that Christ loves his bride, then she'll follow you all the way to the end of the earth, even if you're the ugliest guy on the face of the earth. She'll support you in whatever you do. We must teach our boys that loving means to respect, and it means to communicate, and it means to be tender toward and considerate of and listen to and protect and provide for and value above his parents and his friends and admit when he's wrong. And when we teach our boys those things, and it's not just with words, but it is with words, but it's by letting him see you do that very same thing. And all that's in Ephesians 5 and 1 Peter 3. All of those things are. And if you'll study these passages, they'll keep teaching you new lessons until the day you die. And we won't have to preach so much about wives submit if we'll teach husbands love your wives, and wives will willingly, gladly submit. A little piece of advice about where to look whenever you're trying to solve a marriage problem, or perhaps you're trying to help someone else is struggling with a marriage problem. I would suggest to you that you realize that the root of every marriage problem is selfishness. All of them. And selfishness takes lots of forms. And we try to make it, many of them, we try to make them noble. Like, I'm doing the Lord's work. There are some marriages and families that are damaged beyond repair. And I hate to say that. And it's not because I say that, or it's not because I make a decision, but it's because that one or more of those partners has made decisions that makes it impossible for the damage to be repaired. Husbands and wives have fought for so long, and children's fears have turned to anger and rebellion. And they've beat up love for so long that they've killed it. And the desire is gone. There are some problems that cannot be solved to the satisfaction of everyone involved. Sometimes the person who comes to you is just trying one more way to get what he or she wants. They're trying to get somebody on their side. Not looking so much to solve their problem as to get my way. And to have some support in doing that. Preachers get headed up that way constantly. And so I would say to you, when someone comes to you with a problem in their home, that you not make rash judgments. That you realize that you've heard one side of an issue. You remember the man that said to Jesus, "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." You remember that? It's kind of a strange thing to be thrown in the middle of all the incidences in Jesus' life. You remember what Jesus said to him? He said, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter over you?" "It's not my job," he said. "It's not what I'm about. I'm not getting involved in this dividing an inheritance. In essence, I really don't care." And we don't want to hear that, because that man certainly didn't, because that was the most important thing in his life at that time. But Jesus said, "It's not important enough that I'm going to get involved. I'm not your judge. I'm not the arbiter." And if he wasn't, and he wouldn't get involved, why in the world would we be so foolish as to get involved in something like that? If you want to strengthen your marriage, then we must, as husbands and wives, learn to quit criticizing and learn to love and cherish each other. Two words to focus on in a marriage: love and submit. And both words cut both ways. We've talked about this at least once in a series of lessons, that everybody submits in our God-given way. We all submit. It's not one rules, the other submits. It is that we all submit to God's plan and God's pattern for the home. The pattern for children is found in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 through 3, and Colossians chapter 3. And young people, there are two words for you to focus on: honor and obey. That's God's will for you at this point in your life. And honor denotes the attitude that you're to have toward your parents. It teaches respect for authority. Obey is the action. And it may come as shocking news to you, but as hard as it is for you to believe, your parents know more than you do. There are two results of honoring and obeying. And they're both really good. One is that God gives a promise in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 3, that if you'll honor and obey your parents, things will go well with you in life, and you will live long on the earth. All I can suggest to you is you take the Lord up on those promises and see if he'll fulfill his part of it. There are lots of young people that things are not going very well with them in their life, and one of the reasons is because they're not honoring and obeying their parents. And also in Colossians chapter 3, verse 20, it says, when you honor and obey your parents, this pleases the Lord. So if you're concerned about pleasing the Lord, then honor and obey your parents. And then there's a pattern for parents in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, and Colossians 3, 21. And there are two key words for parents to focus on as we rear our children from Ephesians. And that's teaching and disciplining. Teaching means using words. Discipline means to train with deeds. And when we think of discipline, we automatically go negative. But when you stop and think about disciplining, is there not an extremely positive side to disciplining? You teach someone to discipline their life. Discipline does and can have, if you will, a negative connotation. That you discipline, parents discipline their children negatively whenever they refuse to discipline themselves. But it's all about discipline. And so, parents, as you think about your children, there's two ways that you're to rear them. Teach them the right way, and then discipline them positively. Teach them how to discipline their time. Teach them how to discipline money. Teach them how to discipline their emotions, because they don't know. And if you don't teach them how to discipline, they're not very likely to learn discipline anywhere else if they don't learn it at home. And it takes a long time. And it takes constant, consistent effort. How many of you have tried to teach your children to say, and this is old school, okay? I know this at the outset. How many of you ever tried to teach your children to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and yes, sir, and no, sir? How many thousands of times do you have to remind that child to say that? Not just a few hundred. It goes on and on and on until one day you realize, you know, I hadn't had to remind them of that in 3 hours. You know, I don't know how long, not very long. But discipline takes consistency. And we get tired. We get tired, don't we? And it's not fun being the one. You know, young people, you think that your parents enjoy, you know, riding your case. They don't. They don't enjoy being on your back. They don't enjoy continuing to remind you to clean your room or to do this or do this or do this. They don't enjoy. They got a lot of things they'd rather do with their time than remind you of that over and over and over again. And so you can make their life and your life a lot simpler by responding to the discipline that your parents are giving you. And be grateful that they love you enough to spend the energy and the time to discipline your life, because it's going to pay off for you. Because, and maybe now more than ever, folks, because there are so few young people who do have parents who care enough to discipline them. And you're going to be in the minority when you discipline your life. Maybe now more than ever before, at least in my history, the history of my lifetime. And there are some things to avoid in rearing our children. We're to avoid making them angry or rebellious. And you know, and we're going to talk about this, Lord willing, some more in the future, but I'll tell you quickly in a word how I think that that happens whenever you do not provide teaching and discipline to your children. I think it makes them angry and rebellious when you don't provide what God intends for them to have in the home. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, it says, don't do so-and-so, but instead teach them and discipline them. Rules without relationships leads to rebellion. You can write that one down. Rules without relationships leads to rebellion. I resent it. You know who my Bible hero is? I have several, but in this vein, one of my premier heroes, Mr. and Mrs. Noah. I don't know what their last name was. But as I think about the task that lay before them with three boys, they were able to rear in the most evil society that this world has ever known. They were able to rear three boys who were able to pluck three women as wives out of an ungodly, immoral world and be pleasing to God and be considered righteous. That's the kind of influence that a godly home exerts. Are these tough times to rear children? It's tough times. It is tough times. And good things don't happen by accident anymore. They never have since sin entered the world. But good things don't happen. Godly children don't happen by accident. It happens because there are godly parents who listen to what God has to say, ignores what the world is telling us that it takes to be successful, and lives in front of your children and disciplines and teaches and practices what you preach. Godly homes. When we all come down to the last hour of our life and we look back, if we are granted such mind and time to do so, I can assure you that there will not be any single thing in your life that will be more important to you than the family that you're leaving behind. And will you be leaving them behind in such a way that you have the confidence that you'll know that one day when you all stand before the Lord, you'll be able to gather those children up and you'll be able to present them back to the Lord because He loaned them to you for a little while? And will you be able to leave this life with the confidence that you're bringing them back home with you when you come? Let's stand and sing.